T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Hey, before we get to Paul, let me get you the updated NHL standings, which are brought to you by Dash's Markets. Shop the family of finer foods, Dash's Markets. Sabres lost last night. They sit at 31 points. Devils with 34. Anaheim 35. Ottawa 36. And Detroit, Columbus, and Vancouver all are at 39. Those are your updated NHL standings. Again, brought to you by Dash's Markets. Shop the family of finer foods, Dash's Markets. We are going to the Western Hotline. Mr. Hamilton is joining us right now. We'll continue taking your Bills draft calls as well. What would your reaction be if they took a running back, if they went RB at 3-0? 803-0550 to join us. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Paul, what do you want the Bills to do at 30? You got a particular position that you'd prefer to see them address? You got something you're pulling for?
I'm not a fan of first-round running backs. Never have been. So that would be something I would not want to see. I'll put it that way.
You thinking more defense, more offense? Do you have a preference?
No, I don't have a preference, really, other than I probably would lean not to take running back unless it's just some guy stuck out. And even then, I'm just not a big first-round running back person. I think you can address that need in different ways in different rounds of the draft.
You're old school. You still have a cassette recorder anyway. The Sabres last night, you started your article out in a kind of cool way, I think. It was a hard game to write about. There wasn't a lot to write about from the Sabres standpoint. There were some chances, but I think the most noteworthy thing that came out of it was that their power play was awful and could have given them a shot in the game last night.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the Bruins just were like almost robotic in the way they played, and it wasn't like the Sabres were, other than 6-on-3, minute 33, 6-on-3. I can't say they were awful, but the power play was the thing that they were awful at, and that was the thing that, if they wanted, to get back into it, I really think they could have. And even when there's 2:34 left in the game, when Lausanne takes the penalty, you're down 2 goals, but now you pull your goaltender. And you've got a minute 33, 6-on-3. You score right away. Now you've made it 2-1, and you're still on the power play. So, so even then, maybe it's not all hope is lost. But, I mean, you got one. They didn't get credit for Olofsson's one-timer. Olofsson got a good one-timer in the slot. I'm sure Rask made the save. I don't know why on the sheet they didn't get credit for a shot, but it doesn't really matter. But anyway, it was the only chance they had in the whole minute 33. They had a couple they put over the net, but they really weren't good chances. They allowed the puck to come out of the zone. I mean, the Bruins should never even touch the puck when they're 3-on-6.
Yeah.
And yet be able to clear the zone or anything like that. And it was just a disaster. And 3 different times on the power play, they had 6 power plays. 3 different times they took away their power play by taking a penalty themselves.
I did like the 7 guys on the ice, though. That was definitely a good shot. That was a good idea there.
Yeah, followed by, what did they have, 9 or 10 on the ice a couple of weeks ago? Where they were, they might have been most it was the most horrendous change I've ever seen in the NHL. They had 9 or 10 guys on the ice. And but you know, the penalty Ristolainen takes for roughing. What are you doing? You're on the power play. What do you just go barreling in there and take some guy out? I mean, they just didn't have their thinking caps on when it came to that. And I think in a lot of the game, they just weren't sharp. They weren't mentally sharp in a lot of what they were trying to do.
It'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, because I think in this short time frame under Don Granato as interim coach, Paul, one of the things they've done has shown the ability. I mean, nothing lingers for that long. They're able to come back and improve their effort. Even just the Pittsburgh series, where they weren't very good, at least in the first period of the Saturday game, they came back and played a much better game on Sunday and won. So I'm curious to see how they come back, and I can ask that question in with something you referred to last night. Granato after the game talking about how his team took the easy way out, and he was happy that Boston is their next game again.
Exactly. And they didn't, and that's the thing. They didn't give up in this game. I mean, they had 15 total shots in the first 40 minutes. They had 17 in the third period. Still didn't solve Rask, but they were better, and they had some opportunities in the third period. But, you know, in the end of the day, it doesn't matter if they had 100 shots. They didn't get anything by the goaltender. And, you know, I think the one in the first period, the save he made on Cousins, I mean.
Oh, it was great. Yeah.
Cousins thought for sure he had a goal. I thought for sure he had a goal.
I did, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because Rask was busy. He was already on the other side of the net making a very good save on Ristolainen. And then it pops out on the other side to Cousins, who has the wide open net. And you're thinking, okay, there it is. It's a goal. And somehow Rask flies over and gets his glove on it and makes the save. And, you know, one of Cousins' seven shots on the game. But, I mean, right then and there, you're thinking those were two really, really – that was when they had their opportunities. From the time DeBrusk took his penalty, there was about 8 minutes left in the period. And you had Dahlin hit the crossbar. You had those two chances there. Mittelstadt was in on a breakaway. All their really, really good chances for the game came in the last half of the first period there.
You know, speaking of Cousins, this, you know, watching him play and seeing what he can do on a game-by-game basis has been pretty exciting. He's a personal rush machine. He again showed the ability last night with his speed to get the puck and just fly up the ice, blow by forwards and go wide on defensemen and be able to get a chance out of it. It doesn't score, but it was another impressive rush, and we've seen him do that before.
Yeah, it's nice to see, because I was anticipating he was going to be really good before he ever got on the ice, but you never know. And it's nice to see he's living up to the potential they saw in him when they drafted him, and he's doing it right away, which isn't easy to do in the National Hockey League, and it just shows you what kind of player the Sabres have on their hands there. And if Eichel is still here next year and remains a Buffalo Sabre, I think the Sabres are really going to be, if Eichel and Cousins are their top two centers for years to come, I think that's a very, very good place to start when you're trying to rebuild a team.
So, Jeremy mentioned the fact there was a picture of Eichel. I guess he was at the game last night. We're just trying to figure out, Jeremy mentioned, was he wearing a Bruins cap? I don't know if you saw Eichel or not, was holding up a sign, please trade me, or anything like that.
No, the players are on the suite level, so
I don't have access. Sure. No.
Paul, any level with you is a suite level.
And
he
I'd
just,
pay.
He
I'd
just
pay
hangs
extra.
Out in the yeah. weeds there. He just waits for his chance.
He's going to jump in there. I'd pay extra to be with you, Paul. You know that. The Reinhardt, I want to ask you about him, because we had Don Granato on the show yesterday, who, and we've brought this up with you before, Mr. Hamilton. It's the gift that keeps on giving, Don Granato interviews, because it's really, whether it's Zoom calls with you guys or the Tuesday chats with us, it's really interesting to hear some of the stuff he talks about. And I think a lot of it, fans, hits a really good spot with fans. He talked about Reinhardt, how basically he shouldn't be going back to wing. That with a guy with that kind of vision and that ability and hockey smarts, you want him to be able to work to either side. So why put him along the wall? What about going forward with Reinhardt, keeping him at center?
I think in that case, I'd be looking to move Mittelstadt then, because, you know, I don't think when I'm thinking of a bottom six, you know, I would think of Mittelstadt as a third center. I wouldn't think of him as your number four center.
Mm-hmm.
So if that were your move, I don't know. I wasn't real fan of Mittelstadt on the wing. I've been a much bigger fan of him at center. I've probably been a much bigger fan of Mittelstadt's move to center than Reinhardt's move to center. Not that it's gone badly or anything like that. But you know you're going to get production out of Reinhardt if you happen to put him back to the wing. But if that's not the case, then, as I said, then I think you move Mittelstadt because I just don't see him as, you know, when you're going to the depth chart, 1, 2, 3, 4, as him being your number four center and being a useful part there. That's not what I'm looking for, you know, my number four center.
What's Asplund going forward? Is he a winger? Is he a center?
He's been playing very well on the wing.
Yeah, he's scoring.
He can play
yeah.
center.
Right.
But, you know, he's played very well on the wing and somebody that has shown us. And I always forget about Gergensen's when I'm talking about moving forward, too, because he, of course, was injured all year.
Yeah.
But, you know, Asplund, I think, very well can be somebody as your number four winger or your number four center or, you know, instead of going out and get Ko Ekin, I think, you know, they would have been better off just going with Asplund or – well, I would have signed Johan Larsson before I would have signed Cody Eakin for double the money. And I wasn't a real fan of, you know, signing Larsson just because it was just, you know, he's been here too long type of a thing.
Right.
So, yeah, I think moving forward, he definitely would be a part of things.
One final question for you. He was the backup last night. Do you think we'll see UPL either Thursday or Friday?
It seems like that's what they're leaning towards. They don't want to commit to it, but it seems like they're leaning towards him playing on Thursday.
All right. And everybody's okay with me not having to pronounce the full name all the time, right? We all know who UPL is, I think, if I mention UPL.
You know, speaking of UPL, and he's going to wear number one, Paul, it's definitely been a different kind of time, obviously, in all the sports and Amerks lore and Sabres lore. I feel like UPL is this figure that Sabres fans know about, they've heard about. He's, what, 6'5". What do you know about him? As a, not just as a goaltender, but as a prospect, you know, I want to say it feels like a little bit like Ryan Miller, where Sabres fans knew his name before he showed up, and I know expectations for him are high, right? I mean, this is a second-round draft pick and a guy that's been coming along. He's coming along. When's UPL coming? We talk about what they're going to do at goaltender, and it always goes back to, well, what's going on with UPL? So, I don't know. What do you have anything on him that fans might not know about him, the kind of guy he is? Anything about his progression, how the Sabres feel about him?
I think that's how the Sabres felt, too, and I think that's why the fans felt that way. I think they felt eventually he was going to take the reins, especially after that World Junior tournament that he had, you know, where he played very well. Now, the last – it's funny because the last number one was Jonas Enroth, who was like 4'5". And right. now I see number one out there yesterday, and he's like 6'7", and it's like that's not what number one is supposed to look like in a Sabre uniform. It was kind of funny to see that. So, yeah, I think it's unfortunately that's the thing about the Zoom age, you know, where we're not down in the locker room, we can't have conversations. I mean. That was one of the things to get to know Robin Leonard. You could sit and have a conversation with him. You know, and it, most times it really wasn't about hockey. Might have been what was going on in the world. And he was very, very well read and was very up on you know, current events. So you could get to know players a little bit just by sitting and having conversations with them. I remember when Vanek and Pominville were around. I'd come in and they want to talk about the Bills right away, you know, the Bills game. And they were, you know, really up on what the Bills were doing and how'd you think the quarterback played and that type of thing. And we would have conversations about that. And unfortunately, with COVID and everything, we haven't had the opportunity to be able to do that.
And you do that with Marty, but then the rest of your afternoon was shot. Because one question and you'd be there 5 hours later.
So this hockey season, how many questions have you actually asked Marty total about? 8?
Oh, let's see. He's been on how many weeks? I'd say we average a question and a half per Thursday segment because in the second question, he will cut us off and start rambling. I'm kidding. I love Marty.
Plus, you get to him like 8 minutes late, so the segment's cut in half anyway.
What's
so.
Your point?
And we got to set aside time for F1 talk with him, too. He's a big fan.
He is.
Of
that's right.
Oh, is he?
That's right. He is a big fan. Oh, yeah.
He's all the way in.
Yeah. What's your point, Hamilton? All right, listen, you tell you what, mister, you're late for the break. Screw you. You're cutting you off early today. Ha! Take that. That'll ruin your morning. Less time with us. All right, be safe if you're going to cover practice. Or no, well, yeah, hey, wait. Yeah, do you? Yeah, you do cover.
I think today's Brayton's turn.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever. Be safe. It's snowing outside. And thank you, as always, for your time, Mr. Hamilton.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, Paul, have a good day. His article recapping last night's game is available for you at WGR550.com. Paul's segment, brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. I forgot to ask Paul, I'll text him, to find out who is the tallest Sabre. Like, what's how tall is Samuelson? He's big, right? UPL 6'7"? Isn't Samuelson like 6'4"? 6'5"?
Yeah, I thought UPL was 6'5".
Oh, okay. He's maybe 6'7 on skates. So, all right. So he's probably got the edge on Samuelson. Oh, wait, 6'4"? 6'5"? I got to check. All right. I'll text Paul and see if we can find out who is the tallest. How tall is Thompson?
Oh, he's like 6'6", 6'7", isn't he?
Yeah, all right. I'm going to have to. All right. I'll find out in the break because I'm really curious. The silly things that actually pique my interest every now and then. Sorry about that.
I'm looking over your notes that you sent me of things you wanted to talk about. What is there Montreal records being broken?
No.
It says MTL records that could fall.
Yeah, no, it's not MTL. It's NHL.
That's NHL?
Of course it's NHL. How do you not see the N? There's an N, and then you have the H connecting to the top of the N. It's just the line in the middle of the H is a little bit higher to the closer to the top of the H. That's all.
That's Montreal right there.
You know what? You're absolutely right now that I look at it. There's the M, the T, with the line on the T cross. Because the line is not an H line. It's a T line. Yeah, it's NHL records that could fall. No, I'm sorry. I just that definitely. You know what? Yeah, you're right. I would say that's Montreal records that could fall too.
What are the NHL records that could fall?
That was actually I saw the headline on the story and I thought, ooh, this might be fun to bring up. And I started kind of glancing. I didn't fully read the story. It's a Greg Wyshynski piece at ESPN.com. You know, after Marlowe broke the Howe record. So I thought, oh, okay, 6 NHL records that could fall next. I mean, the career goals is the most interesting one, right? That's Gretzky at 894.
And by the way, if you thought about Jágr, someone pointed out that if Jágr didn't lose time to the KHL and lockouts, he would have passed Gretzky.
Yeah. Yeah,
he probably would have.
He played long enough and was productive enough that he probably would have done that, So I thought that was the interesting one. And then it was like, next one was most games coached by Scotty Bowman. I could care less. I don't know. I don't mean to denigrate a coach having longevity. Most career game-winning goals. I don't even know who held that one. Speaking of the guy you just mentioned, if somebody passed that record, again, I would put that in the department of I could care. I probably should care, but it doesn't really float my boat. Most career game-winning goals is Jágr at 135. That one is also being threatened by, not surprisingly, Alexander Ovechkin.
Overtime and shootouts, though, would skew that, right? You have more wins now. You score the game-winning goal in a shootout.
Oh, game-winning goal.
They give you a
hey, you don't
GW?
Get credit for that, right? You shouldn't. You shouldn't get credit for the, yes, overtime, but not the shootout, right?
No, you get it in overtime, yeah.
Yeah. Most consecutive games played, Doug Jarvis, 964. And, geez, who is the active one?
Is it Marlowe? Marlowe never misses time. That's the other thing about how many games
he's
played.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was Yandel, but he was scratched earlier this season. Marlowe's at 899.
899.
So if he plays
games
next season, and assuming he doesn't get hurt, he'll break the Jarvis record.
Crazy.
Let's see. Most career Selke Trophy wins? Don't care. But Bob Gainey and Patrice Bergeron have 4. And sorry, I should have prepped for this one. I'm going to guess Bergeron. Bergeron, if he gets one more, breaks the tie with Gainey. And then most career power play goals. I guess I should care because this guy played with the Sabres. Most career power play goals, Dave Andrechuk with 274. Give you one guess who might break the record for most power play goals.
Victor Olofsson. No?
Hang on. Let me just Google search and see how many he's got. It's Ovechkin. He has 269 power play goals. So he is 5 away from tying Andrechuk for the all-time record. So that one could fall before the season's over.
I like his chances,
yeah. Yeah, right? I don't think he's going to, like, all of a sudden stop scoring. I mean, the great thing is with Ovechkin, you know where he's going to be on the power play. Like, we talk about that with Olofsson. Teams kind of got used to him, where he is and what he likes to do on the power play, and can adjust to that. You know where Ovechkin's going to be. And he's still scoring goals from the same spot on the power play. He's that good. He's that talented. So anyway, those were the records. 803-0550 to join us. Actually, you know what? Let me grab this. I know.
Tage Thompson is 6'7".
Seven? All right, so he's got to be the tallest Sabre then. I know we got to get to the break, but let me snag a call here since this is what we're discussing. John in West Seneca, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
So I do think it's a good idea if we can draft, you know, either a Travis Etienne or a Najee Harris at 30. And honestly, by the way, Brandon Bean has been talking. I think that we're going to go that way. I know he keeps on talking about best player available over positional needs, which is obviously, we all say, corner and defensive end. So I do think if we can get that running back, I do think it could probably put us on a level of Kansas City or maybe even above, because, I mean, I'm not that big of a fan of whoever the Kansas City running back is, right?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Thank you. So sure. I do think that it can probably put us over the top. I do think if you look at, you know, Travis Etienne, he is probably a better all-around player than whoever we would draft at 30 at corner, like maybe an Asante Samuel or a J.C. Horn. And obviously, like you said, Howard, there's a second and a third round for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know they're talking more long-term, so maybe, you know, we can draft a corner and an edge rusher. Maybe they can sit behind, you know, Jerry or, you know, maybe Levi for a couple of years and then kind of come in. You know, he says that we're looking at more of a long-term approach. So I think that, I think, you know, that we're going to draft a running back, and I think that would be a great idea. Thanks for taking my call.
It is. When you get right down to it, you think about a draft board, and it's hard. You know, positional value has to factor in.
Mm-hmm.
And people would say that running backs don't have a ton of positional value.
Right,
and
that's the big
and
one.
I would agree
yeah.
for the most part. But – you know, if you start to treat, instead of the draft and these prospects that you're projecting, okay, ready? Who's a better NFL player? Is it Jerry Hughes or Stephon Diggs? Who's a better player? Well, I don't know who's a better player. I mean, Diggs is great.
He is.
Hughes has had a great productive career. They right. play two totally different positions.
Right.
Who's a better player, Aaron Donald or Stephon Diggs? Well, I mean, Donald's a this is where someone would say it's apples and oranges, and it's very difficult to do. Of course, you could do it. But to do that with prospects and a draft and guys that have never played a down, and in the case of many of these guys, you know, had half a season, some of them have injuries, some of them mm-hmm. opted out, you know, putting together a big giant board where you just rank them 1 to 260 has got to be tough.
And, you know, like you said, positions too, right? I mean, you're just for the one thing you cited, one guy's an edge rusher, one guy's a wide receiver, you know, teams will typically put more value, I guess, on the edge rusher, right? I was satisfied. I don't know. You made me think about Tennessee. Not that they're devaluing the passing game, but like if you had edge rusher versus wide receiver, Tennessee just let their starting tight end and one of their better receivers leave in free agency. You know, so I thought like in that discussion, Diggs is a phenomenal player, but you might hear GMs go, "Oh, you always want to take the edge rusher. You always give the edge to the edge rusher, quarterback, edge rusher." Right? Are the two top yeah. positions that you would value most on your board?
And tackle and. Corner after that, moving up
yeah.
the board, and
yep.
number one receiver is definitely very high on that
because
list
of the yeah, because of the way the game has changed and throwing the ball and everything, there is more value in that. All right, we'll sneak a break in 803-0550 to join us. What would you think if the Bills? What would your reaction be if the Bills took a running back at 30? Whatever else on your mind, you can join us too here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Hosted host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the pitch, hit, and run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I would definitely take this pick if there's a guy that we're excited about and we've got a good, you know, a solid first round grade on. You know, that's where I would be less likely to move back, unless there's just a lot of guys still floating around at the, you know, the bottom of one or the top of two on my board where I go, hey, I can go back seven or eight spots and still get one of these other guys, plus acquire, you know, whatever, an extra third or an extra fourth, whatever, how far the move would be. So we're very comfortable staying at 30 and getting that fifth year option, but we'll just kind of listen to the board and see what happens.
What?
So that's Brandon Bean talking about the draft prep. We have for you, you know, he was on with us this morning. He also did his pre-draft Zoom call with the media yesterday. We have both available on on-demand audio at WGR550.com. The Zoom call is for about 45 minutes, and his segment with us probably ran about 15. So if you want to check him out anytime you want, WGR550.com. I did want to bring up something about the running back discussion. And Jeremy, you were talking about, well, one of the names that would certainly be in the discussion if the Bills opt for a running back somewhere in round one would be the kid from Clemson, Travis Etienne, who had an outstanding career for the Tigers. But keep in mind, too, like it's not like the term home run hitter was thrown around, elite skill set. When Brandon Bean was on with us, he talked about, you know, complete guys. I mean, it's not just, is he a really good running back? Is he a great receiver? Is he a two-down back? Is he a three-down back? We had someone call in and say, hey, guys, if you're going to take a running back, can the guy pass protect too? That's a really important part of being a running back in the National Football League, especially for a team like the Bills who likes to throw the football. For what it's worth, he did, as his career went on at Clemson, his numbers went up in the passing game, and he was on an extremely talented offense. His quarterback is about to go number one overall in the draft. Five catches his first year, then 12, then 37, and his final season, 48 catches for 588 yards. So his role in terms of a receiver and a handful of touchdowns, his role in terms of a receiver did increase in that offense as he went on in his career at Clemson. So he did show the ability to catch the football. We know he has the ability to run the ball. We know he has the ability to explode and have big run plays. Couldn't tell you. I didn't watch enough closely to tell you how he was in terms of pass protection. But in the other key areas, he did just fine in college. So that would be I think that's one of two guys, Jeremy, unless the kid from North Carolina, Williams, is considered there. But for sure, I think Harris and Etienne would be the two guys most people would bring up at the end of round one. Don't have him? Oh, all right. We'll get him back. Anyway, you can join us on that at 803-0550. I think it's interesting, too, in terms of what Brandon Bean is thinking, one of the things we brought up, and this is different, Bills fans, you have to get used to something. Last season was getting used to the Bills being a pass-first football team, and it was a blast. You have to get used to them, well, we hope, knock on wood, drafting at the end of round one. You know, we did that 30 years ago. You got used to the Bills drafting in the mid to upper 20s at the end of round one. And hopefully he joked that he'd like to have the 32nd pick next year, but hopefully they're going to be drafted at the bottom of round one. But also one of the things I find interesting about this draft is the GM is going into a draft with a setup that he hasn't had here in Buffalo. A, of course, he's drafting at 30. They're not at 8. They're not at 10. They're not at 12. But they're at 30. And he's drafting with a team that is really good, really talented. Doesn't have a lot, there's no obvious hole to fix. That's one of the reasons why, if you're not upset if they took a running back at 30, because you wouldn't look at it and go, well, there's such a, it's not like Milano left and you're like, oh, guys, we've got to get a linebacker as soon as possible in the draft. Or one or both of the offensive linemen left in free agency, Feliciano and, oh, guys, we've got to draft an offensive lineman at 30. You don't have that. You've got a talented roster, you don't have obvious holes, and you have high expectations. This is not any of the previous drafts. We're still trying to, you know, put together the roster. We're trying to fill it out. We're trying to become complete. We're trying to add this, trying to add that. They're a 13-win team and a Super Bowl contender now. And that's why I find that interesting about how he approaches the draft, knowing that, not just you're drafting at the bottom of the rounds, but you're drafting with a team that it's not a complete roster, but it certainly is the best roster these guys have had, Bean and McDermott, since they got here, and how that might impact things going forward. I think that's pretty cool as well. Now who we got with us? Is that Dylan? Or
Dylan again, yeah.
Dylan is a chatterbox today. I would say, Jeremy, so far on the show, when you have had baby cameos, it seems like Dylan is doing more of the talking.
She's the only one I've had. That's why.
You haven't had? Oh, I thought.
No.
Oh,
the other ones, yeah. She's the only one I've had. There was an incident upstairs.
Ah.
Yeah.
I hope everybody's okay.
No. I mean.
You didn't lock your son in the car or anything.
No. Regular bodily things that happen. There's an incident, and we had to clear one of the babies out for the hazmat team, apparently. Yeah. Hey, I had a thing on the draft.
Put on your suits.
Yeah. Quick thing on the draft for you.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Josh Allen's in that one commercial about, like, hey, don't listen to the doubters.
It's cute. I thought it was funny. Yeah.
I just want people to know, if you're going to go all the way in on that.
It was about Trey Lance, by
the way. About Trey Lance. Yeah. All the way in on that, about, you know, you can't doubt quarterbacks anymore. They're going to use it. If you're going to go all the way in.
Yeah.
That means you can't make fun of the Patriots if they draft a guy you don't like. You can't make fun of the Jets if they draft a guy you think stinks. Because if all the analysts don't know anything and don't listen to the haters because nobody knows,
yeah,
then you don't get to mock them for a pick. And I would just like to protect that right to mock people for picks.
Oh, I was just, it's funny. I was wondering where you were heading with this.
It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong.
Yeah, I was going to, my response was going to be, oh, I don't care about what you're saying, Jeremy. I'm going to make fun of the Patriots if I want to make fun of the Patriots.
Of course. Yeah. Listen, it's just like at your fantasy draft, when somebody makes a pick, you mock it. It doesn't matter if they win the league later on that year. No, you don't pay attention to that.
Yeah.
So no matter who the Patriots pick, no matter what the Patriots do, we should not be treating it as like, well, I mean, hey, you're just adding fuel to the fire for Mac Jones. No, mock Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Make fun of the idea that he's going to be good for the – yeah, I just want to reserve the right to think that picks are bad.
Oh, I think
it's okay to still do that.
I also believe there's one rule for everybody else and one rule exclusively for the Patriots. And that's because we've got sick of New England over the years in the Patriot way. So I'm completely, you can mock New England for anything you want as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know how I'm going to react on Friday morning, but if they don't take a quarterback, I know there's a round two and there's a round three, and I don't forget.
If they don't take a quarterback, then the Jimmy G trade is coming on Friday, right?
If not, I'm going to wonder what the heck they're doing. Like, what are these guys thinking? What are they doing?
I'll tell you what they're thinking. They're thinking that Cam Newton can throw the ball to the middle of the field.
Yeah,
probably can.
And it would be full off season. He's with us through all the workouts, even if they're virtual. He wasn't here last year. He was rushed in. He had to go to training camp. He hadn't had time.
He had COVID. One of the athletes that had it and had a tough time.
He's not a better roster around him.
Right, exactly. He's not a long-term answer, but.
But you got to get a quarterback.
The Bills fielded Ryan Fitzpatrick for four seasons.
Yeah, I know.
He threw more than eight touchdowns, though. But again, they had the worst weapons. I think that they'll, if Newton returns with what they've done to the offense and their defensive players opting back in, they won seven games last year. I don't think they even need a quarterback change to win nine games.
Right, but a long-term answer, I guess.
Long-term answer. Doing. Maybe they draft a quarterback in the second round if they don't get one on Thursday. But we'll have to see what Belichick says, because last year he said it was not by design that they didn't take a quarterback. You're going to go 2 years in a row where you're open to it and not do it? Eventually, you know, it's time to take a swing once in a while.
Tell Dylan to send us to break.
She's already asleep.
Smart move on her part rather than listening to me. We'll wrap the show in a moment. Instigators, top of the hour, WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
All right, you got 90 seconds. Anything you want to get in?
I sent you a baby picture.
Oh, where? Who? Text?
I texted to
you. Oh, hold on. Oh, yep. Just came through. Hold on.
I sent you a baby picture.
Oh. That's Dylan, I assume?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so cute. I'm trying to think of a thought bubble to come up with the look on the face at that point. It doesn't look like, why are you guys always late to break? Might be like, why are you bothering my dad all this every morning? That could be it.
Oh, I just... Oops. I just turned a corner and bumped her head against the wall.
Oh, don't worry about it.
That happens, you know?
Yeah, babies' heads are really strong. Don't even worry about that stuff.
Yeah.
So you're hey, you didn't lock her in the car yet. So I mean, what the heck?
Not today.
So that's good.
Not today.
Days
without locking child in the car. Five.
It's like days without an accident at workplace, Joe. Yeah. So you got a green light at home today.
We're on a roll. I got a lot of momentum.
Real quick, we got like 30 seconds. Okay. NFL vote today on rules proposals. Nothing significant is expected to happen. They're probably going to vote down spot and choose, onside kick alternative, might ease up jersey numbers. Okay, apparently that one struck a chord with Dylan.
She's upset with being spot and choose being voted down.
Spot and choose. And a little more responsibility for the booth review assistant. All right, have a great day there, everybody. Please be safe with the snow and the road conditions. And Instigators is next.